open to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. It's a little cold in Southern California, 56 degrees in the daytime here. And let's see, what else has been happening? Well, they shot another balloon or unknown object out of the sky, so I'm hoping that we're not looking at some kind of an invasion. I'm laughing, but I'm not, because it is very scary what's happening now. But I'm going to do the usual thing and talk about what it's like being a Catholic in these days, and I've been actually having some difficulty in focusing my attention on two things. Getting this podcast done on a Saturday, no later than a Sunday each week, and praying regularly. The podcast obviously has gotten done. You're about to hear it, or hearing it now. So I guess I won't focus on that in this episode, but the prayer thing. That's on my mind more particularly. And though I may, as you are, be unique in the eyes of God, I am not unique in my struggles, and I'm guessing if you are a believer, the prayer thing doesn't always come easy. On the positive side, I pray far more than I ever did in preceding decades, and I won't say exactly how many those are. I've mentioned that though I was raised Catholic, it was more by going to Catholic school and that mostly through the tumult of the variable interpretations of Vatican II rather than anything within my family. My parents didn't practice their faiths, but they did set me on the road to my Catholic faith, which is significant enough. But prayer just was a nominal part of life, and that only within the confines of specific school events. In the last years, I have become more participant in private and public vocal prayer, and more recently, seeking the methods of both meditative and contemplative prayer. As you know, since I have mentioned it here on this program, I participated in two versions of Ignatian-style retreats, one online and the other in the summer for 8 days, live and in person. I even have a monthly discussion with a spiritual director whose particular focus is the Ignatian way of prayer, which is primarily directed towards scripture and reading scripture and hearing how God speaks to me as I read and meditate on those scriptures. The Ignatian way mandates, really encourages, a holy hour every day. I haven't succeeded in making one every day, but most days, and whether it is an hour or at least a half hour is so far variable. I'm still trying to find my way, and if this makes a difference, and I'm not sure that it does, I haven't found a comfort level, a mode that keeps me more faithful to it than less. I am finding the more direct way of reading scripture useful as a general matter, but I think I haven't settled on a way that keeps me as faithful to it as I ought to be. I haven't been sure that this particular approach to the prayer life is the best for me, and I think that for now, my approach through the Ignatian version of spiritual direction has been circumscribed in terms of really allowing for transparency on my side. That's not to say I've been lying or anything in what I've observed in my prayer life, but I think, as I do, I have kept it on the superficial, intellectualized level. I'm not saying thereby that I am an intellectual, but I have kept it kind of academic in discussing my discoveries within prayer. Part of that is that I do not know my current spiritual director well. We have only actually met once live and in person, and by nature, I do not disclose to people I know, let alone those I don't know well. The few times that I have done so with people I did know, the result was not what I would have vouchsafed, so I am particularly cautious in this my dotage. That may change. I hope that it does. But I also think that part of it is that I haven't totally found, I don't know what to call it, a kind of real, well-cut access key to my prayer life that pairs away all the chaff of my brain and creates a kind of less cluttered road, if that makes any sense to those of you in the same boat or approaching your own prayer life differently and more assiduously from earlier days of your life. Some of it is about developing good habits. I do not, and they say this is critical, pray at the same time every day. Of itself, that element is itself problematic for me. I'm not saying this is as an excuse, but as a fact of my life. I'm not a person who ever leaned toward the early morning. That was true when I worked, and I think I've mentioned here that when I was working and got into management, I was happy to have flex hours that allowed me to come in later to work and stay later. I tend to like to do things, think things, be things later in the day and in the night. So I have been doing my prayer time, the hour or thereabouts in the evening, or often in the late evening. But this may have to change. Still, that hasn't been the key problem. The key problem has been the structure. Merely looking at the scripture, I also use the app Hallo, which I recommend, where you can get daily meditations to listen to for the daily readings, and that has been a help. And then hearing what God is saying to me, it's been spotty at best. And to be fair, this is also somewhat natural, as there are times when you just get nothing. And the idea about prayer is what Teresa of Avila called determination, or as she also called it, determined determination. It's when nothing is happening that one must stick to the program. I know myself to this extent. I fumble around a lot. I did it when I was studying math, and I was lousy at it. I was lucky enough to find a method that allowed me to get through with the help of a friend who was good at it when I was in high school. And with her help, I kind of threw out that which wasn't working for me, and I managed to get through the required state test, and I did well. Not that I remember any of it today, but for the purpose I needed it, I found a way. With the grace of God, I've come to realize in everything of obstacle. I did it also in law school. Everyone said that a study group was essential to getting through. It was having the opposite effect on me because the debates over the quote right answer, we had true-false exams, by the way, I know, insane, in law school. It had me, though, in obsessional loops, and everyone seemed to be showing off rather than trying to cooperate. So for me, solo study was the only way. Somehow in this prayer thing, there will be, there is that which will help me, again, always, always, with the infusion of God's grace, to find the space for meaningful prayer using this method given by Ignatius. Fortunately, there is help not only from my personal spiritual director, but also the priest who led the retreat in August does retreats day long, weekend long, all over the place, and he records them. So, although the material may generally be the same, each of his presentations has a slight variation, and that variation of phrase or focus on content seems helpful to me in refocusing me and providing a new way of seeing the prayer life and how to do it in a way that truly approaches the Lord rather than allowing me to be distracted. Now, that's Father Ed Broom. He's an oblate of the Virgin Mary. There's another, perhaps so far more well-known, though I think Father Broom is coming up on the inside track, who also talks about the Ignatian way, the discerning of consolation and desolation in prayer, which is a key part of the process, seeing the movement of your prayer toward God and that which gets in the way by temptation. And that's Father Tim Gallagher. It suddenly occurred to me that what I ought to do in my approach that maybe seems obvious, but I hadn't considered, was to go back to the original outline provided for the 10 weeks I had done online that starts with creation, the fall of the angels, the original sin of man, the consequence of sin, the nature of sin, the seven capital sins, the preparation of the people of Israel in the Old Testament, the incarnation, the life, death, resurrection of Christ, the importance of Mary in the work of salvation, because without her yes, we would have needed a plan C that provides a launching point for the reading of Scripture and how to meditate. Up to here, I was in a way trying to reinvent the wheel, and the one given to me all the way back 6 months ago or more was perfect. And from there, I could add my own additional methods of vocal and other prayer. So this past week, that's what I did. I went back to the material provided via Father Broom and St. Peter Chanel. And what that did for me was to show me that there was so much more for me to land on and to chew on, both intellectually and spiritually, and that, in a way, I had, not realizing it, completely skimmed it all, both in that original 10-week online program and also in the 8-day program in which I was being taught to live in prayer. And here's what happened. Not in a bad way, but I got stuck, if you will, on the very first part of reality to a Catholic, to a Christian, to others who believe in the monotheistic God, the fact of my creation. How many times as a child in Catholic school did I hear and say that God created me because he loved me, that God literally breathed life into man? I don't exist but at his pleasure, and his pleasure is to love me and have me love him. Then the nitpicky and deceptive devil begins to mutter in my head. If you're a Star Trek fan, as I am, you might remember one of the, shall we say, not best of the movies featuring the original cast, where Spock's brother, yes, up to where we didn't know that Spock even had a brother. He decides, this brother, to go in search of God, but after hijacking the Enterprise and wreaking all sorts of havoc, he finds that he has not, in fact, found God where he is looking. Of course, it's Captain Kirk who realizes it first, because when the entity purporting to be God demands to have the starship Enterprise, Kirk says, "What need does God have for a starship?" So, I suppose, the thing that the devil, or my circular thinking does, or both do, when it comes to creation in general, and my creation in particular, and yours, is to question God's, quote, need to create us at all. The answer, again, is his love. But then the question, what need has God to give or receive love? There can't be a God, because there is no need of us, no need of me, right? But then, if I hold on and consider the next phrase I hear, it isn't that God needs love or wants love, but that he is love. The highest iteration of the emptying of self is God. I'd say. It's what Jesus demonstrated in the incarnation. He's the second person of the Trinity and also creator in that Trinity. Jesus says, as he often tried to tell the disciples, that in seeing him, we see the Father, the very same who, as we perhaps are afraid to hear, because it demonstrates the reality of our creaturehood, quote, loved us into being, as Father Broom has said. The desire to share oneself is not, in fact, a representation of one's need, but a representation of complete, unadulterated, unagendered giving. God needs nothing from us, not even our love. Our response to his love, by love, makes us what he always planned for us, to share in him, to be divinized. In a key way, our loving him back inures to our benefit, not his. We have heard that love is willing the good of the other, quite opposite what we are seeing in the world at large just now. God can do quite nicely without any of us. He will remain God, no matter whether we accept him, believe him, love him, or vaguely even look in his direction. That he wants our love is different from needing our love, particularly if the want is for us, the other. The only way for us to share in his love is by our freely accepting it, not conditioning it on our creaturely demands. When we surrender to God's love, we're actually profiting in a most paradoxical way. We gain him, and he incorporates us into him. The need is only on one side, ours, and in failing to see that, we hurt only ourselves, not God. This is what reflecting on the first day of the outline of the exercises did for me, the ones I did online, and which Father Broom essentially pointed me to this past week. That said, something I think I've known about myself all my life became evident again, that I am afraid of the very thing that God offers. I have always been afraid of its human dimensions, its shadows on earth in relationship, but I am afraid of it in the cosmic sense. And that is what, and perhaps you, I leave that consideration to each who listens. Obviously, we're all different. And that is my ultimate barrier. My imperfect will pushes against his perfect one. Today is Sunday, and I'm, as I said, late in posting the podcast. I saw something this afternoon at the Mass during which I serve. The priest had gone to receive the gifts with two of us servers on either side. The cross bearer led a group of parishioners down the aisle with the gifts to be consecrated. One of the individuals I had noticed before Mass, and I'd seen him last week too, I'm pretty sure he's a homeless man, but I recall being struck by his reverence as he prayed in the pew. And there he was, having been selected among others to bring the gifts that would be transformed into the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ shortly. As the priest spoke to the several people in greeting this man, the man had tears in his eyes. He had been asked to participate, to be incorporated, as it were, into the liturgy this day, and he approached it seemed from my perspective, with fear, meaning the recognition of the awesomeness of the moment and of God, and trembling, but with also a bit of a joy and a desire to respond in love. I don't know if he was thinking along those lines, but that was what I was seeing in him. I was seeing him give back the love that God had in making him, in making us all, and leaning into it, being embraced by it. And that was before any of us had received Holy Communion. If we do the opposite of what is our tendency to grasp, we can have it all without grasping, but merely responding to the fact of our existence, to the creator of that existence, we can have God bringing us into an embrace with himself, with the I am. He is the I am. I realized this week that I could spend many a holy hour on just this one aspect of the exercises. My creation, the creation, my being loved, my being asked to respond in love. That until I have truly stopped being afraid of or distrustful of the love he is, the love he offers, I'm not going to go far in the meditations or the contemplations or in my walk to salvation. That's why we're advised to work toward holy indifference, detaching from the things of the world. That doesn't mean not to appreciate what's good or use what's good, but only if it leads to the center, to love, not the misrepresentations we see in the world or the misinterpretations we have, but to the essence, the center, God Himself. We have to shove all the distractions out of the way, all the things that tell us that it can't be, that God can't be, that He can't love us because the world is so distorted. That distortion was and is of our making, and we have to look beyond it, work beyond it. And that is what these prayers and meditations do. They slowly, perhaps, but definitely sweep away the distortion so that we can see clearly to the first intention of our creation, union with God. Only regular prayer of laser focus with God's always available grace will lead me and you to the light that is God, the love that is God, in a perpetually safe embrace. The key to union with God is prayer, and lots of it. I think the key in even believing in God and maintaining that belief is to see that the imperfection of this world was not ever meant to be, and would not be but for our refusal to respond to His omnipresent love. Boy, do I have a long way to go, but this reflection has revealed the direction of my prayer life, I hope, using the exercises. And today is a good day to begin. And so ends another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. And just one word, or three words. Persist in prayer. It'll lead you to the embrace of God. I hope you're enjoying this program, and if you are, tell your friends about it. I'll talk to you next week.